Hi, everyone. I'm David Chadwick, and this is News Talk 1110-993 WBT. Welcome to the show. In case you don't know, this is a faith and values program that tries to intersect different issues locally, globally, in our culture, throughout the world, through the lenses of faith and values. Now doing this show almost 20 years. It's been a joy doing it. Thank you, listeners, for joining me on a weekly basis. Many thanks to my friends at Ruth Chris Steakhouse and also Perry's Fine Jewelry, who allow this program to be on the air each week. Well, I have a really fun show today, this Martin Luther King weekend. My wife, Marilyn, is in studio with me again. She joins me regularly, a great thinker, a wonderful person, and my best friend. Well, we have also with us Jasmine Ellis, a friend of ours that we've known for a long time, and she has just been a dear friend. And she's going to give us insights this weekend, this Martin Luther King weekend, into things that you may not understand African-American black people might be a little bit offended by, and we just say them, do them without even thinking. And Jasmine's going to give us some insights there. Jasmine's 27 years old, an African-American herself, but we've known her for years, which has been the coolest part of our story together. We're friends. Marilyn, share how we met Jasmine Ellis.
Gosh, Jasmine, I feel like I've known you since you were born, but really I got to know you pretty well when you started interviewing for one of our SEED scholarship programs, and I already knew your mom pretty well. But what I was prepared for is this young lady she was going to introduce me to, who was you, who had already researched, I think you had called Emory University and other places, and basically decided to put yourself on a new track. You were going places.
Right.
And the question is, did I want to jump in and get involved with helping that happen? So why don't you tell our listeners about that? Because, I mean, you were a go-getter. All I did was jump along for the ride, right?
Right, right. So I think a great, like, thing that you can take from my journey is, regardless of age, when God puts something in your heart, he's going to carry it out. He's going to keep you awake to do it. And even at the age of, what was I, 12 years
12,
old?
You were 12.
I was looking up schools and doing all the research myself. I mean, staying up all throughout the night
to do this. I realized that pretty soon, and I thought, I'm not going to have to provide you with any motivation. I'm going to try to do is build a team around you. Let's see if we can help you get where you need to go.
Right, and it was one of those things where my mom had to make a decision. Is she going to support this vision and this motivation that was kind of put inside of me? Or is she going to continue to have me go the route that she had for me, right? And so she really put her best foot forward in prayer and in action, because prayer and action is both important, because, you know, you weren't knocking on my door.
No. And, I didn't even really know what your needs were at that point.
Right, right. And I don't even know if I did, right? Because, you know, what are you thinking about at that age? But what I did know is where I wanted my end goal to be. And God helped me to backtrack and to set plans and move forward, and actually gave you actionable steps to help me, which was go ahead and apply. Do you have the money? No. Do you even know anything about the process of this? No.
Yeah.
But take those steps and God will make the next step for you.
And we're talking about a Seeds of Hope scholarship program. You're at Charlotte Christian High School here in town. Have a dream to be able to go to college and get a degree and move into communications, but you just didn't have the funds to be able to do so. Marilyn was a part of a Seeds of Hope scholarship program that allowed the two intersect nicely. Marilyn, how did that occur?
Well, actually, let's back up before Charlotte Christian, because when I met you, you were at, I guess it would, you would call it an underperforming school.
Right.
And you knew that that environment probably wasn't going to take you as high as your aspirations. So your first step was to get to Charlotte Christian. And that's when I said, okay, why don't, because we really didn't even have much of a program at that point.
Right, there was no program.
There was no program.
I went as far as I could go, and then God had it so that the amount that was needed, you all fit the gap.
Well, we had helped one student find a way to get to college, and that was pretty exciting, but your mom happened to know that kid. And so she came to me and she said, I didn't know if y'all were, you know, had any kind of scholarship program. I said, well, we really kind of don't, but we are interested in forming one, so why don't y'all be a test case? Go ahead and apply to Charlotte Christian. Do all your stuff, applying for FAFSA and all the other things that you need. Get your financial aid. See what's left over. And what happened was, we found out, and this is kind of a standard now, we found out that generally the gap that people have is about $5,000 a year that they just can't fill, whether that was in private school for high school, in your special case, or then in college. So that became the SEED scholarship, 4 years at $5,000 a year. So you were like the inaugural girl.
Right.
You know?
And let's talk about the prayer aspect that was put into that.
Absolutely.
Because before we applied, we went on the campus. Mm-hmm. We walked the campus. We laid hands on the
building.
You
and your mom did, yeah.
Right. We laid hands on the building. And we prayed around that building. We said, God, if this is for us, we know you're going to make a way. We know that you're going to create steps that we're supposed to take in order to do it. And that was the way that everything came together. And then from there, mm-hmm. right, because he'll equip those that are called. Mm-hmm. And from there was whenever we found out, okay, this is where we're going to, this is what we're going to do. This is who we're going to connect with. And man, he just...
He opens the doors.
He
like moved me into place. I feel like I was just a little piece of his puzzle, but God had a plan for you. And you come from a long line of ministers. Y'all can tell, listening to Jasmine, she's got some preacher in her.
Well, let's talk about that on the other side of the break. Your family background, the people who influenced your life, how you end up at Clemson University and get a degree there, and then your heartbeat now for where you want to go. And most importantly, helping us understand this Martin Luther King weekend, how we can love each other better. I'm David Chadwick, and we'll be right back.
We are many, yet we are one.
Hi, everyone. I'm David Chadwick, and this is News Talk 1110-993 WBT. Welcome back to the show. This Martin Luther King weekend, when we are celebrating, hopefully, repeated attempts where we can learn how to love one another based on the fact of our common humanity, our creation in the image of God, and not the color of our outsides, but our insides and our hearts. To be able to help us celebrate this weekend a little more ably, I have in studio with me my wife, Marilyn. Also, Jasmine Ellis, a 27-year-old African-American beautiful woman who's in the studio with us to talk about not only her past and how God has blessed her and used her powerfully, but also maybe some sensitivities that maybe those of us of a different skin hue need to have, especially as we learn how to love one another. Marilyn, pursue the relationship with Jasmine that we've had. She comes from a long line of preachers and ministers that intersected with our lives and really blessed us immeasurably.
Yeah, I said in the earlier segment when people listen to Jasmine, and they always say this about you, don't they? You got a little bit of preacher in you, and your mom does. But your aunt was Pastor Barbara Bruton Cameron, who had such an impact on this city. So you were talking earlier about prayer and how that kind of directed your steps to where you wanted to go. You cut your teeth on this stuff. This is not fake. This is your life, isn't it?
This is relationship.
Yeah.
With God, not religion. Mm-hmm. And so I think growing up in that dynamic of preachers, but it wasn't just like a dynamic of preachers. They changed the community.
Mm, they sure
right?
did.
In a miraculous way. I remember my aunt saying that she saw birds chirping. Now, this was the number one murder capital in the nation at the time.
It was.
Birds were not there. Okay. Yeah. Even they knew not to come. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And so to say that and to see it, I wasn't alive whenever. I mean, I was alive, but I wasn't really comprehending.
Right, you're tiny
and,
at that point.
And so to see the change in the community, even from the time that I did remember, and to see people flocking there in a way to see God's work, you gain a relationship. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't just go to church on Sundays. I mean, I think we were at church like 6 days a week. Mm-hmm. But then all of a sudden, my mom would get a call at 3 a.m., right? Because we were really impactful in a crisis type of way, And so I think the relationship part that you gain from seeing moments like that and seeing miracles like that consistently, it's almost like that's your expectation.
And the murder rate dropped. And David and I were part of the Ministry of Community Outreach at that time. We worked real closely with your aunt, who's now no longer alive on this earth. But she was known for changing, I've forgotten, what was it called, the Oaklawn area? But now it's Genesis Park. They renamed it. And the city knows how the demographics.
It was the third most dangerous neighborhood in the nation because of the murder rate. By the time Pastor Barbara went in and loved that community and grew that church and influenced that community, it became like the, you know, number one safest community in America in which to live. It was a remarkable transition that then Mayor Richard Venroot actually noted publicly in one of his inaugurations as mayor. And also, interestingly, at her funeral, Richard came and spoke because of the powerful impact she'd had not only on that community,
but
the city of Charlotte.
And so that was your mix growing up as far as what you were able to observe. And like you said, it was a lifestyle and your mom. And so that's the backdrop where you did life, but you had big dreams that were your own, because that's what I watched start to emerge. Mm-hmm. You had this faith walk, but then there were these big dreams that started to emerge. And what I loved about getting to know you back when you were, you know, young, preteen, is you had, you knew you were going somewhere, and you started putting plans in place. And now, as a 27-year-old young woman, I've seen so much of that come true, and you've impacted others. So talk a little bit about, you know, where you went, how you ended up in Clemson, and what you're doing now.
Right. So I came thinking that I was going to be a doctor. Mm-hmm. And so, but something that was consistent in all of my plans to become a doctor was the fact that I wanted to own a bunch of doctor's offices, help a lot of people to do great things. And I found out that just means that I wanted to be an entrepreneur and a business owner, because the biology and the chemistry classes was saying that I did not want to be a doctor anymore. So I found that my gift was in communication. My gift was with people. And so I found that out at Clemson, and I gained some really great mentors while I was at Clemson. Mm-hmm. And went on to help a bunch of other students to start businesses, because mm-hmm. sometimes that's what God will do, as mm-hmm. you all found with your ministries, is God will help you to start other people's ventures, other people's dreams, to fund other people's dreams before he has you to accomplish yours. And so that's what I did. And then eventually it has led me to start Xavier Consulting, which is a social media and SEO. For those who don't know what that is, let's just call it digital marketing for other businesses. And helping those businesses to achieve success and communicate properly to customers, potential customers, and that's pretty much been my journey.
So you are a communicator. Even at Charlotte Christian, I know you distinguished yourself in all kinds of leadership roles. You were an athlete, you were a student leader, but that leadership theme has come through even till this day. So when you get into the entrepreneurial world that you're in right now, you're still communicating. And that's, right. I think your strong suit is helping people see life maybe through a different lens. You and I were talking about something different. It's a couple of weeks ago when we're both on the Seeds of Hope team. You're right. On our team now to help bring in new scholars. And we started having a conversation, and I don't know how we talked about race, because that does come up sometimes. And I think what you said to me was, conversations about race, and let's jump to this now. You said they need to happen when you're at the same table. Talk about how you phrased that. I can't remember exactly how you phrased it.
Right.
It was
so
awesome.
The most difficult conversations should be had at the table. And what I mean by that is, if you're not willing to have the conversation at your dinner table in your most vulnerable place, your home, because I don't know, everyone is raised differently, but my home was raised as your home is your sanctuary. Not everybody's really allowed to come. Mm-hmm. It's a place where you can be your most vulnerable and be your most self. Mm-hmm. And it's a place where you're not really going to bring everybody in, because your kids are there. Mm-hmm. And you're able to have those difficult conversations. And so what that means is, we lead it with love. Mm-hmm. We lead it with permission. And we lead it with knowing that the Holy Spirit has led and guided this conversation. Because before I had the conversation with you, I was talking about an incident that happened to me when I was much younger. And I said I was going to discuss it with you. Mm-hmm. But I said, God, if you give me the opportunity, mm-hmm. I'll say it. This was like, what, 2 years that I maybe had that conversation with God. I don't know mm-hmm. if I said that to you, mm-mm. but I've seen you a ton of times before that, and he never even really kind of had me meditate on it, never had me mm-hmm. think on it.
But it was in your mind.
But he brought the opportunity eventually mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. have the conversation with you. So it wasn't one of those things that was impulse led or even really thought through.
Yeah.
Well, this is fascinating, because your relationship with one another allows you to build a bridge from each other's heart to mm-hmm. the other, and to share some openly honest things. And Jasmine, in the recent months, you and Marilyn have had a conversation, and not in a bad way, but in a really good way, believing that empathy is the pathway to progress. Mm-hmm. That's one of my favorite phrases. Empathy is the pathway to progress. You can't really move forward until you jump into somebody else's skin.
That's a great way of putting it.
We really want to understand something you said to Marilyn, and I want all our listeners to understand as well, especially this Martin Luther King weekend. There are some things that people of a lighter skin hue, white people.
That's white people. Yeah, we are white.
Say,
sorry. That's what it
and
is.
Don't even know they're saying it, that might be troublesome, or I don't even want to use the word offensive. Maybe that's too strong, but, you know, a little bit of a, you probably ought to understand where we're coming from on this, that black people, especially younger millennial blacks, have some sensitivities toward. And a part of what I wanted to do today was help us understand where those sensitivities are, because I think most of our listeners really are people who want to grow, who want to empathize, who want love to conquer hate in our world today.
Right. And so, just disclaimer, you know, I am speaking from my experiences. I can't speak for all black people.
Sure, I understand.
However, what I can say is whenever you have the closeness in the relationship, you understand someone's heart, right? This wasn't done at my job. It wasn't done in a political setting. It wasn't done in any setting where it was, how do you put it?
Like conflict-ridden.
Conflict-ridden. It hadn't hit a surface or anything like that. It wasn't a build-up. It was more of a conversation that we were having about something completely different.
Mm-hmm. And a door opened.
And a door opened, right? And so what I say is, I said, hey, is it okay for me to let you know about a situation that I actually just had about the climate that we're currently in with a family member?
So you asked permission.
She talked to
if
me.
You
I
could
asked,
engage
yeah.
in the conversation
yeah.
first.
Right, because this isn't about what is right, because a lot of people are going to say, well, if they're saying something wrong, you have to speak up for it no matter what. Well, you get to the point where you're like, do you want to be heard, honestly, or do you just want to speak? Because those are two different things, because people aren't going to listen to you if you aren't going to come to them in a fashion that they're going to listen to you.
So a little bit like a marital conflict where you say, do you want to hear me or do you need to be right?
Well,
which is something that really happens in our marriage as well. I'm sorry. I've learned that is a really bad thing to do. But sometimes you engage in the conversation and your needs to be right rather than to hear the other person.
Right. And if someone says that they don't want to hear it, then they're not going to hear it.
No matter what.
No matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And so if it's not coming, if the conversation isn't going to be had on a pleasant platform, or the conversation is not going to be had where someone is inviting you into that, then they're not, because at the end of the day, we're talking about a subject that is very sensitive. If, for example, you in Maryland are looking at a situation and someone comes to you and they say something like, well, I think that you're racist. Think about what that does to you.
Well, the immediate
think
barriers
about the pain that hits.
It's, yeah. it's
especially
hard.
If you
defensive.
Have sown, or especially if you have given your life and taken sacrifices about this, right? Which you have, mm-hmm. as it relates to my aunt. You've taken sacrifices. You've mm-hmm. taken hits. If this is an area where you've taken hits, it hits different. And so it has to be done in love.
Mm. So when you have that kind of experience with someone who's saying something that they may not understand is offensive or at least hurtful, you've got to try to at least understand first, are they willing to hear my heart when I want to share something with them? Everything begins in a relationship. But when that relationship's solid, like what you and Marilyn mm-hmm. have, and hopefully you with me as well, mm-hmm. you can begin to share that and have an understanding of what needs to be said thereafter. So we're going to take a break. Mm-hmm. And when we come back, folks, Jasmine's going to share some things that you might not think are troublesome to people of a different skin color, but are. I'm David Chadwick, and we'll be right back. Hi, everyone. I'm David Chadwick, and this is News Talk 1110-993 WBT. Welcome back to the show. My guest today, my wife Marilyn, has a microphone, as does Jasmine Ellis. Just to be upfront with everybody, because you can't see in a radio studio, Jasmine is 27 years old, an African-American woman, a millennial who really has accomplished a lot in life. Clemson University grad, has her own marketing firm right now. Just a really wonderful person. Been a friend of ours for a couple of decades. Marilyn and I are boomers. We were raised in the 60s through the turbulent times of racism.
Right.
So we have a very sensitive heart here. And Jasmine, even your mom had to stare down a gun from a KKK person. Is that right?
Well, it was my aunt. And so
Okay. Even
in her lifetime, and she's you all's age, that she had to have the experience of someone in the KKK seeing her at a red light, pulling out a gun. I don't know if they thought she was someone else. I don't know what it was. It wasn't anything that led up to it. But they looked at her. They had the hat on and everything, the whole shebang.
Yeah.
And she had that experience. And while that was her lifetime and she saw racism in a very dramatic way, right? Super violent. And while as a millennial, we see it in a more, we pick up the signals very early and we address it there, right?
So especially sensitive to it when it happens.
Well, they were sensitive to it as well. They just didn't speak up on that because okay. they saw what it was before. I mean, I grew up with my grandma saying, well, my brother was beat in the streets by the KKK, was beat in the streets. And so when you go from being beat in the streets to subtle comments, you can get past it.
I got you. There's a nuance that's going on here today, and it's probably different generationally for boomers and Xers and millennials. But the key is we've all got to try to understand each other,
right.
walk in each other's skin as best as possible, which is the definition of empathy. Sympathy is just feeling bad for somebody when they're going through a tough time. Empathy is actually jumping inside their skin to understand their life and their worldview. And you're trying to help us do that today for mm-hmm. this problem of racism in America today from a millennial perspective here on Martin Luther King Weekend.
Yeah, and that's how the conversation got started because, like we said earlier in one of the earlier segments, Jasmine and I were having a conversation about something entirely different. And then I think the door opened, and of course, we've known each other for years. So, like you say, we were kind of at the table.
Right.
We've known each other. There is a loving relationship. And you did ask permission to share some things with me. And you started out by telling a couple of anecdotes because I said, Jasmine, I sense that, and I've raised three millennials, and I love millennials, but I said in the millennial world, there's a little greater sensitivity to the racial stuff even before it gets to be what I would consider outright racism. Mm-hmm. And you helped me understand the nuance thing, and you shared a couple of examples. And I thought, this is just good to know because sometimes people don't mean to sound racist, but they might because you pick up a signal that they're not even trying to give off. And one
right.
of those was a social media example, right?
Right. And it has to do with learned behavior, mm-hmm. learn nuances that we say in the home. Right.
Yeah.
And they may not have had the experience or the hatred towards anyone, but they heard someone else say it.
Well, wasn't
and
one
so,
with your cousin? Did
yeah,
you have a situation with your cousin
right.
on social
so,
media?
Right. So I posted something about something that had to do with race
mm-hmm.
and saying, I'm so glad that they're taking the steps for this. And she said something along the lines of, well, this has nothing to do with race. Now, just a disclaimer, my cousin is white, and but I've known her my entire life.
A company that was taking some steps of action?
Right. I don't want to mention it.
Okay, you don't have to mention the company's name,
They were taking appropriate actions to solve a problem that happened where racism was displayed in their business.
Okay.
And she said something along the lines, it's not about race. And that's
Did
something.
Did you say work ethic? Didn't you say it was about work ethic or something, not
it's,
about race?
It's about, it's about hiring the right people.
Okay.
She's something of in HR.
Yeah.
And so that was her perspective. I knew her perspective, but I knew the perspective that my friends were going to have on her.
And that's what struck me is the way you said that.
Right. And so my perspective on this type of thing is I made a commitment that in this cultural climate that I was not going to we made a commitment, me, my family, my friends, that in this cultural climate, we were going to speak up whenever we felt like we saw things that came off as a way to look at a whole entire group of people,
mm-hmm.
if that makes any sense. So what that means is I saw that she posted that and I said, no, this is exactly about it, because that statement in particular is meant to dismiss
mm-hmm.
how people are being hurt consistently.
But what you told me that struck me, and this is why David wanted to have this show,
uh-huh.
what you said to me was, I love my cousin too much to let her say something, even on social media, that she might not be aware hurts. Even if it didn't hurt you, you knew people that would mm-hmm. hear it through a different filter. And so you took the time to meet with her and kind of say, you didn't mean to do this, but here's how it comes across to maybe not even me, but you're going to get reactions
right.
from other people that are sort of like me, right?
Right. So even with the relationship and the love we had, I addressed it on social media. I didn't address it fully. I just said, that's not mm-hmm. what it is. That statement is rooted in racism.
Mm-hmm.
You're not that, because we know the sacrifices you've made mm-hmm. for our family, mm-hmm. but that's
you
what
love
that's,
her.
And I
yeah.
love you. However, never, ever, ever, let's put a disclaimer out there, mm-hmm. is social media the time or the place to, and we see it even in the boomers,
yeah.
never is that the place to ever have that conversation,
yeah.
ever.
Yeah.
It's never going to be received
Matthew 18:15,
yeah.
guys,
yeah.
if your brother or sister offends you, Go to your brother. Go face to face to your brother or sister, not social media, not text. Yeah. Go face to face and deal with it as two people who love each other.
And she heard
in person.
You. And didn't she hear you when you had
that conversation? Right. So we drove an hour and a half just to have a conversation and to make sure that we cleared that air and to say, hey, I know your heart, and I should not have addressed this on social media. I should have called you. I should have had the conversation that way and said, hey, I know your intention, but to other people, this is going to come off as racism isn't really alive today, which, by the way, puts another puncture or your feelings on this really don't matter. Your pain doesn't matter. Right.
Yeah.
And that is in no way how she felt or how she meant it.
Jasmine, she was glad.
Could you share the statement real quickly? Let us know what it was that was said that was particularly a struggle for you.
Right. So she said that this has nothing to do with race.
Okay.
Which is a common
statement. A lot of people say that.
A lot of people say it today. And so one thing about it is, especially when you hear people say, I don't see race. That's another one is I have to see race. I'll be honest. It's one of those things where I go into certain environments where I become a Holy Spirit speaking in tongues type of individual before I go in, because I have to make sure that the blood of Jesus is covering. Honestly, this is how I feel. And it's because I can't not be aware of who I am whenever I go into an environment. I have to be. If I'm not, it could come off a certain way. Right. I could be labeled an angry black woman if I express my opinion a certain way. I have to be extra generous with my smiles, if that makes any sense. Things in that nature.
So that's something that I would never understand because I'm an older white guy and I just don't have to deal with that. You know, I don't have to worry about walking into a store and maybe having the security guard follow me around.
Right. That's like
you've
a common
had that
thing.
Happen?
Oh, yeah. All the time. So that's like one of those things. It started as a kid. And so, and then it's explained, why is this, I just went to this aisle and then came over here. I've never stolen anything in my life, you know? And so it's one of those things where, okay, whenever I pick something up, I can't go really close to my pockets ever. You know, you just want to, and what it happens is, this isn't necessarily the way to deal with it, but this is the way that I've coped, is, you know, you just try to make your presence extra comfortable so that you just avoid the nonsense. Is that the right way to deal with it? I'm not an activist, right? And so I could probably, you know, talk to the owner, and I'm not very argumentative, so but that's the way that I deal with it.
Well, you go the extra mile to be kind and gentle and overt in your love for other people, and so they get that message from the beginning.
So can we talk about showing the love for other people about my neighbor?
And that's what I think is so strong about you. And I want to say that God's probably put you in a place where you can say things that others can't. And this incident that you shared with me about your neighbor is stunning and it's beautiful. And I would love for you to share that with our listeners.
Right. I grew up in a soup kitchen type of environment, which meant we partnered with a bunch of grocery stores to make sure that if you do not have money to buy groceries or you need plates prepared, that we were going to make sure. And it was really like your feet to the streets, go anywhere you can. People don't always look like they're hungry.
And your aunt still does that. She still does it.
It's called Beauty for Ashes Ministries. And she's still, to this day, she's in a smaller environment now than she originally was. But she has all the same connections. Yeah. So instead of just blessing her church, she blesses the churches of Charlotte. And so what that means is she can't even fill. Her freezers are filled. Her refrigerators are filled. And so all these other churches who may not have these connections or the gift of having a conversation with people or the history of it, she goes and she makes sure that they're also supplied. Mm-hmm. She's continuing to bless the body of Christ. But the conversation that we had was about my neighbor. And we continued to...
And he was white, right?
He was white. And we would just go and bless our neighbors with a bunch of food, right? Every single week. You never know who you're blessing. And we would just go door to door blessing our neighbors. And he was living with his mother at the time. And later on down the years, throughout the years, he just started to gain a relationship with us and doing everything from cutting the grass for free, everything. And so what ended up happening was he lost the home.
He lost his mother's home after she passed. Okay.
And we said, we're gonna do a garage sale for you. In the process of doing that sale, we found a KKK member's card. And God blessed us to you know, continue to do the work.
Help me understand. You're blessing this man and have for a while.
And he has blessed us.
And he's
blessed you. It turned into
a
real relationship.
And it was a real relationship in the neighborhood. And you find out he used to be in the KKK.
We found out that he used to be in the KKK. And so we continued to, we knew the relationship. So we didn't stop at that point, right? We had
you
the
paid
sale.
His mortgage, so he didn't lose his house, right?
Right. We sent all the money to him, so because he had moved down to Florida, and so that he would be able to use the funds. And from there, he had a conversation and said, "This is what I was. This is not who I am now." And it was obviously an older picture that he had, and it just shows to show that God will sometimes cover your eyes and your ears so that you're not able to see the initial person that you're meeting before he allows you to bless them.
Yeah, so you guys became friends, and then you were able to confront this part of his life, and he was
10
able
years
to
later.
Respond.
Ten
yeah,
years
and say,
later.
That was a part of my past, and that's not who I am anymore. Jasmine, when we come back, I want you to give us some clues, too, on some other things that people say without even thinking that might be a little tender for people who are African-American. I'm David Chadwick on this Martin Luther King weekend. Thank you for joining us. We'll be right back.
This is the star, this is your heart, this is the day you were born.
Hi everyone, I'm David Chadwick and this is News Talk 1110-993 WBT. Welcome back to the show. Marilyn, I'm going to let you take it from here with Jasmine Ellis, our friend here on Martin Luther King Weekend, to try to give some practical examples of some generational sensitivities that we don't often think about as boomers, Xers, two millennials in this area of racial injustice and racism.
Yeah, you know, Jasmine, you and I had a chance to have this conversation, and it was neat because we're different generations and different races. And so we were talking very forthrightly about some of these things that were going on in our world today is so crazy and the climate's so tough. And I said, Jasmine, help me understand this. A friend of mine's younger daughter, and she happens to be black, was offended when she drove by a street one day and it said Plantation Estates.
Right.
And my friend, who's more my age, said it didn't even dawn on me that my daughter would be feeling that kind of pain. And that opened the door for you to say to me, well, you know, there are other things that people say that may get under our skin or slightly offend us, and they wouldn't even realize they're doing it. And you gave me a very good example of something that somebody had said to you. Why don't you share that?
Yeah. So oftentimes when you see African-American kids that are intelligent, they'll call them well-spoken.
Yeah.
Instead of just, you know, you're just another smart kid.
Yeah.
And so
you're saying that the white person will say to you, you're so well-spoken.
Yeah.
In other words, you talk good for a black girl.
Right. Exactly. Right. So my mom was brought up in a town where they called her White Lily. Mm. And the white implied smart because she was in all the smart classes.
See, and people don't realize that sometimes.
Right, right. And so that's where the hit comes. I don't think a lot of us really kind of get mad about that one specifically. Mm-hmm. However, it's one of those things where, okay, we know that that's an area of you not knowing.
Mm-hmm. Just not knowing. Isn't that what you said? You said, I realize people just don't know.
They don't know because they don't know the root of it, right? Mm-hmm. For my mom, it was White Lily because she was smart.
She was smart.
That was just like saying smart Lily. And for me, it's...
Her name's Lily.
My mother's name is Lily. And for me, it's you are so well-spoken. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's just so amazing how well you speak. And what that means is I speak like you, you know? I mean, you know, I speak in different vernaculars for different sets of people. And so that's exactly what that has to do with.
But somebody might not feel racist or even condescending toward you, and they might say that just because that's what they've always said, and it will come across. And that person, because a friend of mine I told about our little conversation, and my friend said, I wish she would tell me more. Isn't that funny? She
right.
said, I want to come talk to her. I want her to tell me more things that I can do just to be, you know, to be empathic, to be sensitive, because we want to build bridges
right.
here.
Right. And so are you making yourself open to that type of conversation? Most people are not going to go for a fight. The loud ones are. Mm-hmm. And it seems like a lot of people are going for a fight, but it's really only the loud ones. Mm-hmm. Most people aren't going to want to have that type of confrontation. And honestly, if you're talking about being a black person, it is asked of you often.
Mm-hmm.
And so it feels exhausting. Do I want to have a conversation? about race again for the 20th time that I've experienced it today. No, you know, I had it once in the past 2 months.
So coach us, tell us ways that we, you told me, you said, you know, these conversations need to take place at the table. Well, if you don't have friends,
how are you
going to have the conversations? And thankfully, right. You and I and others, we've done a really good job, I think, of making a lot of friendships. But a lot of people don't have friends of a different race or different generation.
Right. Diversifying your circle. And so what that means is, what environments are you getting in? Are you volunteering? Are you the people? Who are the people that are in your church? Who are the people who are your friends? These are areas where you should be trying to learn mm-hmm. about different cultures. And then from those relationships, you'll experience these quote unquote insights.
Mm-hmm. You asked me, David, you and I knew Jasmine's aunt for years and years and years. And Jasmine asked me the question yesterday when we were talking on the phone. How did y'all get to know my aunt so well? And I thought about it. I couldn't even really remember who introduced you and Barbara, and then you introduced me to her. All I know is that it was like the relationship just became like glue. And there was a lot of mentoring that took place, cross-cultural Bible studies. We just couldn't get enough of being in her world, and she in ours.
And she in our world, too, yeah, which I don't want to ever imply. And I think this might be another place where, well, Barbara in the inner city learned so much from white pastor on the south side of town. Nothing could be farther from the truth.
Right.
I learned as much from her, more than she ever learned from me. And we shared ministry together, and we prayed together, and we loved each other together, to the point where when she did pass away, she asked that I do her memorial service. And I was, of course, honored to do that, because when I looked at Barbara, I didn't see color. I saw a great woman of God who literally transformed the whole neighborhood for Jesus.
Mm-hmm. But so, it was a mutual, I think the mutuality of it. And I think you go into it going with humility, saying, yeah, I may have some resources that will bless you, but you have a lot of things that are going to bless me, maybe even in a bigger way.
Deeper
spiritual life. I would say, I won't say I don't see race, because I actually like to see race, because I like differences. I think we all bring something to the table.
Yeah, that's another one, Marilyn. Yeah. I don't see race.
Yeah, I like you.
What a great. I mean, that's a great thing to be able to not see, but I have to see it.
See,
but I have to know it. You know, very well.
I like seeing color. I mean, because I like the nuances that it brings to the body of Christ. I think everybody brings something different. But I will say this: Barbara was sort of a mentor for me. Your aunt was sort of a mentor for me in some areas that did have something to do with race, but not always. Mm-hmm. Some of it was with parenting. We did some parenting classes together, and she had unique insights into parenting. And so it's rich to learn from one another.
So I think the common ground that you found was you found a passion. You decided to go to a different environment that wasn't necessarily your racial group, and that you had a common passion with, which was ministry. And from that, the commonality of ministry led you to a genuine friendship.
Yeah, to the point
where...
So
friendship is the word, isn't it?
We were just friends. We were human beings created in the image of God who just became good friends. And that really is the key to overcome the racial issues that we're celebrating this weekend with Martin Luther King, to say, hey, we want to overcome this. We really do want to sing that song, We Will Overcome, because it's still a hideous blight on our culture, but it can be overcome, can't it, Jasmine?
It can be overcome, and like you say, get so close they can't kick you.
Yeah, that's a great phrase. My daddy came up with that one. If we would dare move toward one another and empathize with one another and try to jump inside each other's skin, that would be the key for all of us learning how to love one another and have this society overcome this awful blight. 10 seconds, any final thoughts?
Just continue to diversify your community and base it upon the passions. More than likely, there are people that are around you that have the same commonalities, and find other people that don't look like you to express those commonalities with.
And dare to ask the question, what do you think? And listen to their heartbeat and jump inside their skin, and it'll draw you closer together. Marilyn, thanks for being with me today.
Yeah, it's all about making friends, isn't it?
It is.
When you get right down to it.
And happy Martin Luther King weekend to you all. As you take tomorrow off, reflect on the fact that we're one human race. Really, the color that should allow us all to be one is red, the color of our blood, because that's what unites us in our common humanity. Hey, love God, love your neighbor. Do those two things. You have a lifetime's worth of work to do. I'm David Chadwick. This is News Talk 1110 993 WBT. Talk with you all next week.